On today's In Is For Networking, we cover the basics of simple network monitoring protocol, or SNMP. Now, SNMP is ubiquitous in networking equipment, and that means it's almost certainly going to be available to you as a resource as long as you're working with a network device that's manageable, because not all devices are manageable. Some of them aren't, but most of them are, and SNMP is going to be there for you. I am Ethan Banks with Holly Metlitsky. The format here is to pair the battle-scarred veteran of the packet wars with someone newer to the industry, and we exchange information. So if you are new to networking, this is your show, and if Holly and I do our jobs well, you will walk away each and every episode with useful networking information that you can put into practice. And by the way, this podcast is now being published on YouTube, which you knew, it's an audiogram, right? Well, no, we're also publishing it in the Talking Heads format. So if you'd like to see Holly and me chatting, go to the Packet Pushers YouTube channel. Holly is very pleasant to look at, and I wear a hat. So, okay. So Holly, let's jump into this topic. What is SNMP? Now, I was working on this script, and you were reading this script, and what you thought SNMP was versus you looking at the script, it seems like you're coming from a point of like, oh, crap, I don't think I know what this is all about.
Yeah, very much so. It started off with, yeah, I know it's a monitoring tool, right? So you like send data somewhere. Somehow, and I don't know, configure it in the CLI and stuff gets shipped off to something, and cool, that's what I thought about it. And going through the script, I was like, wow, there's a lot more, and the way it works and everything else was a lot more, not necessarily complex, but a bit more intricate than I thought it functioned. So I'm excited to record this, and you know, I'm gonna learn something new along with our listeners.
Oh, excellent. Okay, this will be fun then. This is going to be a lot of fun. SNMP has been around forever. The last episode that we recorded was about network monitoring stations, network monitoring systems, network management systems, all depending on how you define the acronym. And what we didn't really talk about was how the information is gathered by the NMS and pulled into the NMS from the network devices. You need a protocol. You need some kind of a way to go ask the device questions and have it give you an answer back, and you pull that answer back and make your graphs and whatever you're going to do. That's SNMP. That's the protocol, the language, if you will, that is used between a network monitoring station, network devices. Now, it's, in fairness, the legacy protocol. It's the one that's been used forever. And a lot of people in recent years have been saying SNMP is dead, or it's dying. And it just isn't, not yet. It's still the protocol that pretty much any network you walk into as a network engineer, if they have a network monitoring station, it's using SNMP almost certainly. Despite its age, it's just like, it's stalwart. It just keeps marching on, keeps going ahead. So if you're reading things online, SNMP's dead. It's not yet. This, even in 2025, this is still real and valuable. And you're nodding your head in agreement. Yeah. You've run into it enough to believe me on that.
Well, I think initially I didn't and thought I could skirt by with my minimal understanding of it because I didn't have to think about it much. And last week, I must have been, I ran headfirst into it. A customer wanted to configure SNMP and to get, I think, to log stuff into their whatever management system they were using. Yep. And I very quickly learned that I didn't know much about it. So it's around and it pops up. So
well, hopefully by the end of this, you'll know all the things. Yeah. Okay. So what is SNMP? I'll define it real simply. It's a protocol that allows a hierarchical tree of values to be either queried or set. You can set the value or you can ask it for what the value is. You got to have some way of pulling that information. That's what SNMP tells us. And like I said, it's been around a very long time. You can use SNMP to find out how much traffic is flowing through an interface, whether all the power supplies are online, system temperature, interface errors, how many clients are associated to an access point. A lot of the stuff I think I mentioned in the last episode, you're pulling it all via SNMP in some way. You're querying some specific value in that hierarchical tree of values to get a number back or a text value back, whatever it is that you're asking about. And so that means the SNMP data is structured in this hierarchical tree format. So let me just take the word. I don't know if this hierarchy can does that help you, or does that like obfuscate what we're trying to get at here?
So my issue with the word, well, not my issue, where it's confused me going through these notes and trying to figure it out is, to me, it's hierarchical means it's ordered, right? Something's got a high priority or high preference than others. Might take us a little bit off track, but how has that come about? Is that user defined the hierarchy? Is it just standard to SNMP, like from most important to least important? What does that hierarchy look like?
It's not, I wouldn't say importance is the right word. I know what you're getting at. You think of hierarchy from, again, an importance perspective is a way to think about hierarchy. But hierarchy here is more like structure. How is the data structured? The data's got to live in some way. And it's SNMP data is organized as a hierarchical tree. So if you think of it as a tree that's got roots, and then there's a trunk, and then there's branches, and then there's twigs coming off the branches, and then there's leaves on the twigs. Think about it more like that as a metaphor for how the data is organized.
Okay. If we talk about it, let's say, in terms of topics or ideas, would it be like differentiating topics within a bigger picture? Or because I'm like, the trunk holds the tree up, so what is holding up, like, your, like, what is that to SNMP hierarchy?
Exactly. As you get deeper and deeper into the hierarchy, the structure, the more narrow the topic or the item is that you're going after. As you work your way from the trunk, if you will, down to the leaf being the actual thing you're querying that's going to return a value to you. And they're all grouped in a logical way. When you were growing up in school and you were in like biology class, you probably went through kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species as a way that all the critters and so on the world are organized. It's kind of like that. We've got this organizational hierarchy, this structure that go from category, like you were saying, most important to least important. Well, think broader categories to more narrow as we walk down the tree, from the trunk to the branch to a twig to a leaf. Now your question earlier was, well, how is that hierarchy defined? Is it user defined? Is it, well, no, it is based on a standard. What those trees look like is generally agreed to by standards bodies, and then vendors and anyone else who supports SNMP follow suit. They map their SNMP tree, if you will, within that standard. So let's explain this a little bit. So there's, I'm looking at a diagram that I found on a Paessler site. I mentioned Paessler in the last episode as I was trolling around looking for good illustrations of the SNMP tree, which is called the MIB tree, by the way, the Management Information Base, the MIB tree, the SNMP MIB tree, the SNMP Simple Network Management Protocol Management Information Base tree, the hierarchical organization of objects. I found on Paessler's site this great diagram that walks you through how a lot of it's historical, but how the structure was defined. So at the very top of the tree, the trunk of the tree, if you will. I don't want to say top, and then you think about the top of a tree, like the canopy in the forest. It's more like the trunk, the bottom in that sense. But this happens to be an upside down tree. We've got ISO, the International Standards Organization, is like the trunk. And then we've got an identified organization is at like your next level up, and with a bunch of other things on that level. But the one we care about is the identified organization. Then there's another level called DOD, and there's another level called internet. Most of that doesn't matter, honestly. It really doesn't, other than to explain that when you're trying to identify an object in the tree, you need a way to identify it. How do you get there? Well, historically, again, there was this MIB, Management Information Base. each level of the tree is represented by a dotted decimal number, and you walk the tree from trunk to leaf, I'll say, is the best to try to keep my metaphor, my analogy consistent, going from the broadest category to the most specific category. And so when you're looking at SNMP objects, you will see them represented by a quite lengthy dotted decimal number. I want to know the value of TCP data flowing through the interface. Okay, well, you're going to find that object in SNMP MIB to the SNMP MIB tree to query at .1.3.4.1.2.1.2. And all those dotted decimal numbers that you're like, well, I'm never going to remember that. Yeah, you don't need to. You don't need to remember it. It's okay. But it is a way of explaining how in the MIB tree, all the objects you might want to query using SNMP are organized and how they're represented with that dotted decimal notation. Each dotted decimal representing the next part of the MIB tree as you walk that tree from trunk to leaf. All right, I got to shut up now.
Got some questions, which I think that explanation really helped piece that object identifier together in my head. Because initially, like you said, I was like, oh, what is this? And I just saw this string of dotted decimals and I thought, oh gosh, not this again. But I'm looking at the tree and if I like follow the pattern down, you put the numbers together, it gets you somewhere.
But yes, it gets you somewhere. Yep.
So I've got 48 interfaces on my switch. Yep. Right. Does each interface have its own unique object identifier that is specific to that switch, or
I'm going from memory here, but yes, there is. Well, there's going to be an object ID and then an index number. So each interface will have an index number, and I'm trying to remember if that correlates to an exact OID object identifier that we are querying or not. Without actually looking at the SNMP query format, I don't remember 100%. But effectively, if the question is, can I uniquely identify a specific interface on a switch with 48 ports? Yes, you can. You can do that with SNMP and pull statistics about that. The exact mechanics of it, I didn't think to check before we started recording. And I know there is such a thing as an SNMP index because it used to stymie me at times because way back in the day, you could reboot a switch and the interface index numbers would change. Meaning the one you were querying before you rebooted the switch ends up being something different after you query, which can really throw off your monitoring. I don't think that's a modern day problem. It's a truly ancient problem, but you're bringing up, I got scars, Holly. I mean, this, issues.
But so then an interface, let's say we're not talking about the specifics, right? But just to call any interface, that OID, that object identifier, would be the same because that's identifying the object, which is an interface. So which interface doesn't matter, but that dotted decimal number will be the same across the board.
Yeah, it's gonna. So there's two parts of the MIB tree that are worth highlighting here that are different in important ways. The IETF, Internet Engineering Task Force, has published for decades now RFCs, Request for Comments, documents that are the documents we refer to for internet standards. In RFC 1213, which goes back a long ways, they established something called MIB, among other things in that document, they established something called MIB2, which is a standard set of MIBs and OIDs that any network device that is compliant with RFC 1213 must respond to. So under MIB2, that I think of that as like a generic MIB. That's a MIB that it's going to be any network device that supports SNMP is going to support MIB2 and all of the MIBs that are underneath that MIB and give you a predictable set of metrics that you can draw from because they're standard. They're all MIB2. That's an industry standard that everybody conforms to. However, under, let's say, alongside of, I think technically it's actually above MIB2, you've got the private MIBs. Private MIBs, if you actually walk the private part of the MIB tree, become, like you were saying, are they, can they be user defined? Well, this is the closest you're going to get to quote unquote user defined. It's not going to be, like you and I as network engineers, users that can define our own, but vendors underneath the private part of the MIB tree will have their own unique MIBs that they created on their own. There's no RFC document behind them. They're unique to the vendor. And they're usually where the really cool and interesting MIBs are. So it can tell you things like that would be pretty non-standard, like, I need to query the fan speed of this switch. And it's got, four fans in it, something like that. Well, that's not the same from device to device and switch to switch. So there's no, it doesn't fall under MIB 2. But the vendor can tell you, yeah, I know that this fan is in this position in this switch, and it's facing front to back or back to front, and it's rotating at this many RPM, or it failed, or, whatever the case may be. That's all hiding under that private MIB. So you've got this MIB 2, this kind of standard thing defined in RFC 1213. Then you've got this private MIB hierarchy underneath which you will find a bunch of unique vendor MIBs that are specific to their environment. That was a long way to answer the question, and I've lost track of the question now. So did we answer all the questions for you had?
Yes, I think the question was about the OIDs and if they are specific or unique, let's say. And I think the answer is it depends.
It depends.
Yeah. Without those indexes, yes, they kind of standard if you're using MIB2. But if you're not using MIB2 and using like the private way, then it could be unique to a vendor. I think I summarized what you said.
And if so you work for Juniper, if you start poking around in Juniper documentation, or there's probably going to be very public documents about this, and just go search for Juniper MIB, I bet you're going to get hits on a bunch of documents where Juniper will actually specify, hey, these are MIBs that are private for us. We've published them. They correlate to, I don't know, the EX switch line or the MIST APs or whatever they are. There's probably a bunch of unique MIBs under there. And they'll tell you that dotted decimal notation, how they fit, where they are in the tree, and then right down to the specific OIDs, object identifiers under there, what the nature of the data is that that they're publishing, what format that data is in. So when you retrieve it and get a number, you're like, what is this number? Is this bits per second? What is this? And the MIB description document will explain all of that information for you. I see you looking at your screen. Did you just do a search?
Yeah.
Did you get a bunch of hits?
It's very, I mean, it's all like OS dependent, but it's actually, if you're listening to this, do that while we are listening, because it's very interesting, because it shows you that hierarchy exactly and unfolds into the hierarchy, and then Juniper specific MIB where you mentioned that's where the private stuff will start unfolding. So it puts that all into perspective and you can understand what we're talking about and visualize it at the same time. Very interesting.
Very cool. And if you get into like writing your own scripts that query an SNMP OID value, that dotted decimal, those documents, like what you just found, Holly, become very interesting to you because like if you're writing a Python script or a Perl script, there's SNMP libraries that allow you to very easily set up your credentials and then go ask for a data back from an OID. You pull that into your script. Now you've got this value you got to do something with. The documents you're looking at are going to explain again what that number is and the format and what to do with it. So you know how to munge it within your script and spit out something useful for you. So yeah, a lot of fun stuff. Okay, so SNMP data hierarchically organized in a tree, the MIB tree, management information base tree. The MIB tree has a bunch of MIBs in it, and MIBs organize down into eventually OIDs, object identifiers. And you can walk the tree from top to bottom using dotted decimal notation that takes you through the entire tree hierarchy. So that's the big framework for how SNMP data is organized. Next question then is, okay, how do I interact with those OIDs yep. that are out there, SNMP operations? We got read operations, I can read something. I got write operations, I can change a value to something. And I got logging and alerting operations that I can do with SNMP. We don't need to get into all of this in too much detail other than that's, I mean, it's kind of, it's something like intuitive, right? I can read, yeah. I can write, I get alerts. Makes sense, yeah?
I didn't know before recording this episode that there were write operations, and upon looking into this, that's pretty cool because it means you can change yeah. things without having to go into the CLI and manually do it.
Yeah, it's actually a good trigger to point out that there are lots of ways you can set up a network device to do what you want. The CLI is the one we think of as the most obvious yeah. one. SNMP is yet another way that you can configure a network device to do something, assuming that the OID is there that is settable in a way that lets you accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. It all depends on the task at hand. And there's a bunch of other mechanisms too. We'll hit some of the other mechanisms at the bottom of the show. But so for SNMP read operations, you've got something called a get operation. You can do I want to get this OID, and SNMP will return to you the value. You can do also get next, which if you're trying to pull all the data on like a set of 48 ports on a switch, and you want to hit the same get on all 48 ports on a switch, you can do a get next operation. Keep getting something until we're out of that sort of object to query. There's no more interfaces to query. I'm done. I think that's roughly how it works. Get bulk, I want to ask a big question and get lots of information. That's it. Different get sort of operations with SNMP. For write operations, it's not a get. It is instead a set there. Sorry, you had a question?
Add a comment. I realized there's something that we didn't mention that I also stumbled into, is that specifically if you're looking at these get operations, right, it's not returning just the OID. That can be converted into like English or a readable name. So, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. I just wanted to mention that so people don't think, oh, well, what's the point of me doing a get and I get 1.7.3. You know, it returns a readable name.
No, you're getting right. You're getting what you're querying is the value. You're yeah. saying, hey, dotted decimal thing that represents an OID. What's the value in there? Mm-hmm. Give me the number, or the text string yeah. or whatever it is that happens to be stored in there, because you can store all kinds of things in there. So yeah, we're not retrieving the name of the OID. We are retrieving the contents of whatever's stored in there is the thing. So if I were to ask for bits that have flowed through the interface, and then 5 minutes later I ask bits that have flowed through the interface again, I should get a higher number at the second poll, right? And then I can get a sense of how much data is actually flowing through the interface over time. Yeah, exactly. And that's what's up. Write operations, where you're doing a set, you're actually setting the value of whatever that interface is. Like you can, I haven't done this, but off the top of my head, you can probably set the description of an interface via a set operation within SNMP. I probably have done that. That sounds like a thing you should be able to do. You can also, I remember messing with this back in the day. You can actually push an entire configuration into a switch with a set and then tell the switch that you're going to use this configuration as your next, the next time you boot up. You can do things like that. There's all kinds of crazy powerful things you can do. A couple other SNMP operations worth mentioning is we just talked about gets of various kinds, the set operation. There's also traps and informs. A trap operation is alert. Within, you can configure the SNMP engine on your network device that if this event happens, send a trap. And you can set up different classifications of traps and so on, and you will set a trap destination. What IP address do I want to send the trap to? And a trap is an alert. It's an alert message that's got some kind of information in it. Where you're going to send it to is your network monitoring station, your network management station that we talked about in the last episode. It will receive the trap and will do something with it. It will be a trap receiver. It will have knowledge about traps and what to do with them, and will alert you in some way. Oh, received a trap from this device that said this. OSPF neighbor went down, or whatever it is. That you can use traps for lots and lots of things. So that's a trap event. If you also use syslog, which is not an SNMP specific thing at all, but I have found it pretty common that if you set up a network device to do syslogging, where you're writing to a syslog server loggable events, an SNMP trap will very often also have a parallel event or alert type within syslog as well. So it's kind of an open question in my mind whether or not you need to configure your device to do traps, because if you're doing syslogging, you're just getting the same information twice, once sent as a trap, once sent as a syslog event. Do you need to do traps? There's no right answer. It depends, as we like to say on this show, right, Ollie? Okay, so traps, and then informs is the other sort of logging event. And I was reading, it's been a while since I read about informs, but I was just doing some quick refreshing of my memory online. You can use an inform to that when a trap is forwarded to an NMS, the trap receiver would know, I should tell other network management systems about this trap as well. So it's sort of like, I want you to amplify this. I want you to tell other network monitoring stations about this. And I was like, trying to decide if I had a use case for that. Yeah, I don't think I ever ran into that before. So I don't know if informs are especially common, or if it's just in my personal experience, I just didn't happen to run into systems that were using informs as such. Another source I was reading, what I should have done is gone to the RFC, and I just didn't dig into that before I got here, but it was saying, an inform will acknowledge that the alert was received. So you can tell the SNMP engine, hey, I got your trap. I got your inform, basically, message. And there's some kind of a mechanism there to acknowledge that the alert was received, which is interesting, because if we've talked a bit about TCP and UDP on this show, Holly. Do you know if SNMP is TCP or UDP?
It's UDP, because when I looked into the informer, got the same information, and it was interesting because it's saying even though you're getting a acknowledgement or an ACK back, it's still running over UDP. So it's not quite, it's different.
It's right. So the key here, if you're listening to this and you don't really know the difference between TCP and UDP, TCP is an acknowledged transport layer protocol, meaning when you send a packet using IP and then TCP as your transport layer, TCP will send acknowledgments back. I received the thing you sent me, roughly stated. UDP does not. There is no acknowledgement. You send it and it gets there, it doesn't get there. You as the sender have no idea. So SNMP is UDP. It uses UDP for its transport, meaning if I'm sending a trap or an inform message as a router to the network management station, I don't know that it got there, it didn't get there. What if it's really important and you really want to know? It looks like you can use an inform and get a higher level acknowledgement. UDP won't do the acknowledgement, but SNMP as an application will do that acknowledgement for you, is what I was gathering doing that reading. So, okay. There's a lot. Any questions before we go on to the next thing, Holly?
No, I think I definitely have a better understanding than when we started this episode. So we're going in the right direction.
What do you think about SNMP if you consider security implications? What comes to your mind?
Well, if we are just sending information about all our devices over some protocol, that could be causing some issues if it's not encrypted or things like that. I'm not sure how everybody would feel about that. I don't know if the content you're sending is necessarily a security risk, but I think that all depends on what you're sending using SNMP.
You nailed it. The nature of the data you were pulling via SNMP, polling in this case, can be interesting to a hacker. So let's say there's a bad guy who's a bad actor who's managed to put some kind of code into your network that is monitoring traffic flowing by. And it just so happens they're in the right place to catch SNMP data as it flows between devices. Now, never mind how that might or might not happen or whatever. Let's just assume that's what's happened. Is the data giving that hacker information about your network that they could leverage to launch a new attack, a different attack? And the answer is maybe. It all depends, possibly. And for certain kinds of data, yeah, definitely. If you're pulling that information and they happen to get in the middle of it and see it. So if that data is unencrypted, that's a security risk. That's a thing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about SNMP versions then in that context, because to me, the biggest motivator for how you're going to choose which SNMP version to deploy in your network will be driven by security. It's going to be driven by security. So there's three versions here we want to mention. Version 1, version 2C, and version 3. Version 1. Let's spend 3 hours talking about SNMP version 1. No, actually, we're not going to do that at all. It's obsolete. It's obsolete. Now, a lot of what's in SNMP 1 is carried forward into SNMP version 2, but we don't need to spend any more time on SNMP v1 other than to say it is obsolete. It is, and you don't need to worry about it. You're not going to see SNMP 1 even as an option to turn it on. I've never seen that in my years. So. SNMP version 2C. Well, there were multiple iterations of version 2. Version 2C, or if someone just says version 2, what they mean is version 2C. That is very commonly deployed. Your most modern network operating systems are going to offer you version 2 and then version 3. Both of those choices are going to be there. Version 2, I would describe as the legacy way to do things. It's unencrypted. Its authentication scheme, its credentialing scheme is very, very simplistic. Let's talk about those. You would have with SNMP version 2 something called a community string, kind of like a password. If you know the password, if you know the community string, you can access the data in the SNMP MIB tree on this device. And there's two kinds of community strings. One is read-only and one's read-write. That's it. That's the security mechanism. If you know the secret word, if you know the community string, you can either get read-only or even read-write access. You can get and set permissions based on whether or not you know that community string. And it's all plain text. So if you don't know the community string, but you're in a position to see the traffic flowing between the monitoring station and the device, you can figure out what the community string is by doing packet captures. So it's not very robust as far as security goes at all. And it's worse, Holly. It's even worse because most network devices have default SNMP community strings. One is called public and one is called private. And so if you know, I'm just going to try and use public as my community string to see if I can get read access on SNMP to this device. Yeah, it might work. Private, do I have read-write access? Can I actually do set operations of this thing? It might work. That's a hole big enough to drive a truck through, and it's very common knowledge. So it's probably going to be found on like older devices that haven't been, seen a lot or haven't been updated recently, if you will. But those devices are out there, in default configurations where no network engineer, no adult was in the room when that device was deployed. And so they're left at default. And yeah, you can go pull that information. Go have some fun. It's worth a shot. Go see what actually responds on the wire to public and private SNMP v2 community strings. And you might be surprised at what was like, holy crap, I actually got an answer back. Seriously? It's scary. That's a thing. Okay, so that was it for years. That was what we had, and it worked. And the world is a different place. Kind of related to that, we use Telnet a lot, which is plain text remote shell. So you could log into the device with Telnet and get on the command line and start typing things. Plain text, you could see username, password, anything on the wire if you could intercept that traffic. But we don't use Telnet anymore, Holly. What do we use instead?
SSH.
Yes, exactly. We use SSH, secure shell, instead of Telnet. Well, just like SNMPv2 is, you know, kind of the Telnet level, SNMPv3, that's where you want to go. We've cranked up the security a lot. It's way more robust. So SNMPv3 introduced SNMP views, groups, and users that SNMPv2 did not have. V2 only had the community string thing, right? With V3, you get a view, and a view would be like, these are the things that you can see in the SNMP MIB tree under this view. And you actually scope exactly what things you can see in that view. Maybe you only want people to monitor interfaces, and that's it. You give them the rights to that part of the MIB tree and no more. That's all that they can see in that particular view. And you can come up, you have as many views as you want. If you want to do a bunch of different views that expose different parts of the MIB tree, yeah, do that. Go nuts. You got one that's really restricted for the NOC because the NOC only needs to be able to read certain things to do what they do, the network operating center. But you have a view that lets you see everything because you're a network admin and you need to be able to see anything at every given time. And so your view can't be restricted. It's got to be, you know, show me all the things. Yeah, there you go. All right. So you got views. Think of those as RBAC. Have you heard the acronym RBAC before, Colly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Role-based access control.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yep. Where depending on who you're logged in as, you're given a certain set of rights to what your role is. Yeah. You get access based on your role. It's kind of like that. So that's SNMPv3 views. We've also got groups. So a group will define whether you're read only or read write, what security encryption methods you're going to use, security like your user password scheme, how you're going to do your authentication, what encryption method you're going to use so that the data going back and forth across the wire is encrypted with a particular algorithm, cryptographic algorithm, and so on. The group categorizes all of that stuff. And then what views you have access to if you're in that group. So you define a group, the view, what part of the MIB tree I can hit. You define a group. This is the sort of permission I have to this view, how I'm going to authenticate, and how the data is going to be encrypted if I'm in that group. And then you finally will create a user, and the user goes into the group. So user goes into a group. Group has access to views.
Yeah. Now, so thinking about this, I would probably go with V3 because even if I'm not really carrying that much sensitive data, I'd probably rather be safe than sorry, one would assume. But I definitely have bumped into a couple customers who don't want to migrate to V3. Is this just because, I guess, based on all of these things, it's a little bit more difficult or in-depth to set up?
Yeah, and I actually converted some networks from V2 to V3, and it's finding the views, the groups, you know, the user scheme. It's way more overhead from a management perspective to do that. And so the decision that your clients are making to stick with V2 versus V3 is they're making a choice for convenience as opposed to maximum security. Now, you can mitigate the risk of SNMP data flowing across your network and kind of scope where that data is and really keep the risk of that bad actor scenario where they're sniffing the wire and trying to pull stuff off the wire and see what information they can glean out of your network by doing things like so a lot of companies will build a dedicated management network. To manage all their network devices. All their network devices will have a dedicated management port that's attached to like a specific VLAN. We talked about VLANs in an earlier episode. Yep. And then they'll put an access control list that says you can't talk SNMP to this device unless your request comes from this IP subnet, whatever the subnet is. Mm-hmm. And my SNMP management station doing the SNMP querying lives in that management network.
Yeah.
So you can really limit the damage, if you will. You're only going to run your SNMP queries, your gets and sets across that management network. You're going to limit the allowed SNMP traffic to that management network. And so even though it's still, if they're running V2 and it's plain text and it's unencrypted and it's got the community strings and so on, as opposed to, you know, the more robust authentication and so on of SNMP V3, yeah, it's not nearly as secure, but if they've put these other mitigating controls in, it's, you've mitigated the risk of the bad actor, you know, seeing SNMP traffic and using it to their benefit quite a bit, which is typically how it's done.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, I think a lot of hesitation to move into a newer, more secure platform is just overhead. People don't want to take the time to change it. And if you haven't had any issues,
SNMP 3, it can be hard. It can be hard. Yeah. And some of the configuration code required to build the views and build the groups and users and assign it all, it's just, if you're used to SNMP V2, which is comparatively simple, like the actual... Yeah. Lines you punch into the SNMP configuration stanzas are pretty straightforward. When you get into V3, especially if you haven't spent the time to really understand how it's working, it sucks. I mean, I remember in the conversions I did from V2 to V3, getting the stanzas right so that I can actually talk to this device over SNMP V3 and get the answers back I'm looking for just took time. It was like development time to test and read through documentation and try this and, you know, poke around at that and get it going. It was a thing, and every network operating system is a bit different. So for people that are like used to 2 and I got my community strings and I'm good to go, you know, okay. Yeah. I get it. This is the problem with a lot of security issues in IT. You don't get a result that's different from what you had. At the end of the day, you're using SNMP and getting data back. Do you get different data, better data, more robust data, anything like that with V3 versus V2? Nope. It's the same data. So what's the compelling reason to move from V2 to V3? Well, it's more secure. Yeah, but we've never been hacked by it. I got to make a lot of changes. I got to figure out different code. I've got to work on, you know, views now and then build groups and a hierarchy with users. And then it seems to be broken half the time. I don't want to mess with it. That's why people don't make the change, even though it's less secure, because it's hard.
Yeah. So I guess my next question would be, you mentioned the very beginning that people are saying SNMP is kind of dying or going away. I would assume that's because people identify some problems with it and maybe are moving away from it, or maybe reasons like that. What is the story there?
There are modern network devices support other ways you can pull data off the off the device. It's that simple. And those are better. One can argue, but they're better. They're better devices, or better methods of pulling data off of those devices. They're modern protocols. I need to set this up in a different way. So SNMP does have some common problems. One I would call is the polling problem. This is maybe the biggest one. When you use SNMP, you're polling on a cycle, on a time interval. Every 5 minutes, every 15 minutes, you're going to reach out, query the OIDs that you're interested in querying, and get your data back. So let's say you're doing, you're graphing bandwidth utilization. If you poll every 5 minutes, you'll get a number from minute one to minute zero to minute five, you know, that 5 minute gap. What happened between minute zero and minute five? You don't know exactly.
Yeah.
All you know is you had some number at minute zero and some number at minute five, and there's a difference between the two. And you do math and you know the difference, and you go, okay, I can calculate my bandwidth utilization was X, whatever the number was. But inside of that 5 minute window, it might have been a flat with a massive spike for 10 seconds and then flat again. You don't know. Polling obfuscates detail. That then the longer your polling cycle is, the more detail you're obfuscating. You miss details between those polling cycles. You don't have that problem on a modern system that is doing streaming telemetry. That is, instead of you reaching out and polling the device is sending data in basically real time to you as quick as a second, you know, with 1 second interval. It's sending you data just every second, chunk, 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 sending you more and more and more information that you're pulling in. SNMP doesn't do that. It sits and listens. It, I mean, it might send you a trap or an alert, right? But it's not sending you OID information on a regular interval. It's not capable of that. You need streaming telemetry to do that, and which modern switches increasingly are supporting. It's baked into the chips and into the ASICs, into the silicon. In a lot of cases, the chip is capable of doing that streaming telemetry. So it's happening in real time without impacting the switch. SNMP's got another challenge here with it's all the processing is happening via the control plane CPU. We talked in an earlier episode about how you've got the ASIC that does the packet processing at very fast speeds, but then kind of another CPU off to the side that's like running the routing protocol daemons and running SNMP and responding to SNMP queries and so on. Well, if you do some crazy get bulk or get next operation where you're like, hey, I want to see this massive chunk of the MIB tree, just send me all the things. You're walking the tree is what that's called. You can, especially on older devices with older CPUs, absolutely crush the switch the router where it's like, because you just asked for thousands of objects potentially, and it's kind of like, oh, you want to know all this? Okay, let me figure this out. Reading all the things, sending them back to you, reading, sending times a thousands or thousands of objects that you just asked for because you're doing this massive walk the tree style SNMP query. It's one of those mistakes that, at least, I don't know if modern CPUs can tolerate walking the tree better than older ones did. But again, back in the day, it was one of those mistakes you'd make once. You'd be playing around with your SNMP tool and you'd point it at some big old switch with the bazillion interfaces on it and say, show me all the things. I want to see everything. You walk the tree and everything goes dark on the network for like a split second. You're like, what just happened? We just lost routing adjacencies. Stuff is happening. There was a disturbance in the force. Well, you just crushed the control plane CPU on that switch by asking it that massive SNMP question that it did its very best to give back to you as quickly as it could, to the exclusion of all the other things it was already doing. So you need to be a little thoughtful sometimes when you're asking a switch SNMP questions, and don't walk the entire tree on your core switch during production. That's bad. another challenge is data transformation. Although this is a problem everywhere, streaming telemetry or whatever doesn't fix this. But you did that search a little bit ago and found MIBs and OIDs that Juniper, in the case of what you were looking for, will publish. Part of what's in there, it explains. You're getting back a number, and the number is this. And so now you know what the number is and how to transform it into something you care about. Maybe it's sending you bytes, but you care about bits per second. So you know, I got to multiply this thing, or I got to divide this thing by, or multiply this thing. There's an 8 involved somewhere. What so you can transform the number into the number you care about. That can be a challenge. And sometimes the numbers that SNMP OIDs are storing are absolutely mystifying to at least to me at first glance. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do with that thing. And you got to go look at the documents like you searched for and found to explain it to you. It can be a little nuts. But data transformation is a common problem across all of IT. I shouldn't say it's like that's like an SNMP thing, because it isn't. Yeah. It's just one of those things to be aware of as you work with SNMP data. If you're kind of writing your own code or getting your own scripts that are doing things with those values for you. Okay, so some of that in mind, There are modern day SNMP alternatives that we're not going to dive into today, because mm-hmm. there's several other shows here potentially that we can talk about. But let's talk through some acronyms, Holly, that I'm going to guess you've run into, especially in the Juniper world. GNMI, have you run into that one?
That one I haven't, actually.
Okay. GNMI is interesting. It's Google GRPC. The G stands for Google. It's a Google, as a company, has helped establish these specifications. Google Remote Procedure Call, GRPC, Network Management Interface. And it's a, like SNMP is a protocol, a transport, a language for exchanging information, right? It's another way to do that. It's typically used, GNMI, typically used transport for streaming telemetry. I think GNMI is the future. It seems to be what the industry has rallied around as, you know, the way to be formatting and pushing data off of a network device and into some kind of a streaming telemetry collector that's going to graph or react to that data in some way. So GNMI, that's an acronym worth Googling and going to research. Actually, don't Google. I don't use Google anymore. I haven't for a long time as a search engine. I actually pay for a service called Kagi, which is amazing. Just a side thing. Because Google, it's getting so hard to get useful results out of Google that I actually pay Kagi for their search engine, which is pretty awesome. And I get way better results out of it these days. That's a commercial. Never mind. It's not a commercial. They didn't sponsor that. I just love Kagi. Anyway, NetConf is pretty widely supported. Okay, you're nodding your head. That one, I'm like, for sure. Juniper's been doing NetConf for forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That I know and have used.
Yes, that's another way to get data into and out of a switch, another protocol, mm-hmm. another spec. It's got its own transport, and it's a fairly different method from SNMP, but accomplishes many similar things and more. APIs, application programmatic interfaces, you can via an HTTP style query hit the API and either set values or retrieve values that way. APIs are another pretty common way to get that kind of data to and from. Lots of network devices support have some kind of an API they support, and usually they're pretty well documented. That's pretty common. Stepping away from network devices for a minute into the Microsoft world, they have had something for years called WMI, Windows Management Instrumentation. It's an example of a server management protocol. It's been around forever. I assume it's still, you know, in use today. But I mean, WMI, it's kind of an excuse to mention that a lot of servers support SNMP as well. It's not unique to like router switches, firewalls, and so on. Mm-hmm. There's servers that support it, but Microsoft world, you're looking at WMI as a similar kind of a function. We mentioned Syslog. Syslog is really a server kind of tool, but lots of network devices can write to Syslog. That's a whole episode we'll do at some point, maybe talking about Syslog and Splunk and log collection tools and what you can do with it and so on. We mentioned flows and flow collection, NetFlow, SFlow, JFlow, IPFix, and what those flow records do. That's not SNMP specific. That's a whole different animal. And then even beyond all of those things, which are standards in some way or another, I don't know about WMI, but I mean, pretty much everything else I said is pretty closely tied to some sort of a standard. There's custom software, proprietary software, where the way they're going to get information is you're going to drop one of their agents on your device, and it's going to collect information and report back to the monitoring server. You know, that's a thing that can happen too. There's hardware devices that'll sit in line and do packet analysis and report back and give you all kinds of monitoring and management information. They're all niches. They all tend to be, you know, a bit nichey as you get into that world, what exactly the thing is accomplishing. But it's a big world. Monitoring is a big, big world between the last episode and this one where we focus mostly on SNMP. I mean, you can specialize in just this if you want, you know, as a network engineer. You really can, building network monitoring systems and configuring SNMP and pulling useful data, building reports, building dashboards. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to do this kind of stuff. But beyond fun, it's necessary. Yeah. We also kind of need this stuff. So what do you think, Holly?
I think that's why it's fun, is because it's necessary. Anything that makes your day-to-day life a little bit easier is definitely more enjoyable. But I think I really enjoyed, like, I learned a lot from this. I mean, I had no idea about this MIB situation of SNMP. So that was really useful, and just the gets and sets and understanding the capabilities. I didn't really know that either. So really just a whole lot of new information, and it's pretty awesome to now understand what I configured last week and what it's actually doing and how it's doing it. So, I can now go back and have a intellectual conversation about SNMP, which is good.
I would love to hear your experience if you get to like do some lab work and set up SNMP v2 versus and then do an SNMP v3. I'd love to see how that works out for you and what you think, because building the views and the groups and the users is just, and the encryption, it's a different, when you do v2 and it's like, oh, this is easy, I'm gonna do v3 now. Oh, this is harder. I'd love to see what you think of that. Worth it, but fun. And then maybe do go Wireshark and look on the wire and see what you see with V2 versus V3. That would also be fun. Well, okay, everybody. Thanks for listening today. Hope this helped you get your head around SNMP. There's, as always with these shows, as deep as Holly and I go in, 45 minutes or an hour, there's so much more to explore. So anyway, we hope we got your mind spinning, whet your appetite, and thank you for listening today to Ins for Networking. We will chat with you again next week. More jargon, concepts, big ideas from the world of packets. I think maybe DNS and DHCP, Holly. We were talking about that a while ago as a show that we should get into. And I know you were interested in DNS specifically, and that's a whole thing. So maybe we'll work on that one for next week or the week after. We'll see. Well, if you have comments, questions, a topic request, something you want us to cover, would you let us know? You can do that at packetpushers.net/followup, and we will do our very best for you. If you want to connect with Holly or I, you can do so via LinkedIn or the Packet Pushers Community Slack group. I am Ethan Banks, and Holly is Holly Netlitsky. You can join the Slack group for free, packetpushers.net/community, and please do. There's 3,500 odd people that are in there from around the world, and just come on in and take a look at the channel list. Lots of stuff going on, including a channel just for this show. If you want to connect with Holly and I that way, join the NS for Networking Pod channel in our Slack group and chat at us. We'd love to hear from you. Please share NS for Networking with your colleagues, your peers, your friends, everybody. We would really appreciate that. And just remember, networking isn't hard. Other people figured it out, so you can too.